I'm sorry, so sorry.
Okay, Connie Francis, thank you very much. In this political season that we are right in the middle of, divisiveness and let's just call it insult for sport, is everywhere. And it's not just at political conventions and rallies and protests, but it's also in our offices and at home and especially online. This might be one of the most difficult times, if you think about it, from a national perspective, to preserve and strengthen our relationships. And, that's really what I care about, preserving and strengthening our relationships. We are all just one bad tweet or Facebook post from an ugly argument or straining a relationship with somebody we really care about. Which is why, for the start of today's show, we are talking about apologies. And we definitely want to hear from you. If you've had a bad apology experience or want advice about making an apology, asking for an apology, and this is a part of it too, accepting an apology that someone offers you, get in touch with us. There are so many ways you can join this conversation. Call us at 212-433-9692. Leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. The phones are open, and, you know, just like Joni Mitchell said, call us at the station, please. The lines are open. We want to talk with you. Let me start with a very short personal history of apologies. Personal history on apologies, and the anatomy of an apology. The first bad apology I can remember was when I was about, I've got to say I was maybe 10 or 11, and came downstairs dressed for school, and my mother was really underwhelmed and made some sort of circus clown comment. And I said, you know, Mom, that hurt my feelings. And she said, no, it didn't. That's sort of the archetype of, you know, where are you going to go from there when it comes from, I was looking for an apology, and she was telling me, no, my feelings were not hurt. Well, where I go from there was becoming like an apology litter bug. If you bump into me on the street, I will apologize to you. If you drop your anvil on my shoe, I will say, oh, I'm so sorry. So there has got to be a middle. We've got to find a middle ground between apology deniers and profuse apology makers. And so I'm hoping that we can talk about that zone today. And just to apologize first to Brenda Lee, who sang the lead-in song, I'm sorry, I thought you were Connie Francis, but you were, in fact, Brenda Lee. So let's take a call from David in Manhattan.
Philip, can you hear me?
I can absolutely hear you. I apologize. I'm a little bit new at this, and so I'm sure that if there is an apology to be made, it is on my end, not yours.
Thank you, Philip. Well, first of all, I'm a big fan of your column, and I listen to you whenever Leonard...
Oh, dear. Have we lost you again, David? There you are.
Oh, okay. Let's try this one more time.
You try it. Thank you.
I'm a big fan. Love your interviews when Leonard has you on the show. In fact, he interviewed you a few weeks ago, and you were talking about politics and whether or not to discuss them between and among friends and family. And while I generally accept your advice, I have to take issue with you and just say that it gets to a point where you do have to respond. A particular issue arose recently involving my wife and a family member of hers who posted on her Facebook page that said that anyone who votes for Hillary Clinton lacks character and is unpatriotic. And my point of view was, you must respond to that because, irrespective of who you're voting for, he is not in a position to call you unpatriotic.
I hear you, David. I hear you on that point. I think you're making a really excellent one. There comes a time when in not only in political debate, but in, you know, personal interactions, where you have to say, this is where I draw the line. And when someone calls you unpatriotic for voting for someone that they don't like, I think you can sort of say, you know, I'm sorry, I can't agree with you on this. And I don't think you have to get into a big protracted thing with him. But I do think it is, I do think it's a place where life is about line drawings, and conversations with people and debate is about line drawing. And I think a good place to draw the line is when somebody calls you unpatriotic. Because really? I don't think so. Do we have another caller that you like? Let us go to Josie in Manhattan. Hi, Josie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm pretty good, too, on this very hot New York day. So I always think that an apology is an acknowledgement of the other person's feelings. Whether, you know, the person is wrong in their assumption and what someone might have said to them or not, but at least you're acknowledging that person's feelings. And my experience was that I had said to someone, a friend of mine who I've known since college, I said, you know, the way you spoke to me, I didn't appreciate it. And I know you probably didn't mean it, but it hurt my feelings. And her response was, I'm sorry you feel that way.
That is a very common one, Josie. I think what you're saying is directly in line with something that Shelley, who on our show page wrote, which is really what the anatomy of an apology. The first thing you've got to do is identify that you've hurt someone's feelings or they've hurt you, yours, and the other person has to identify emotionally enough, which it sounds like your friend did, but you have to go beyond that. You have to go to the place where you say, you know, you have to empathize enough to go, gosh, I can feel that badness, and I'm really sorry for that. And then you have to express it. So your friend sort of shorthanded it and gave you kind of like a half-assed version by saying, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way, which also implies that a normal person wouldn't. So let's go beyond just hearing that the other person is upset to try to put ourselves in their shoes and feel what they might feel and express some regret for that. Thank you very much. Shall we go to Angela next on line 4? Hi, Angela.
Hey, how are you? You're doing a great job filling Leonard's shoes.
That's I know. Right. I think we should tell Leonard to take another week. What do you think?
I don't know. Are you up for it? I don't know.
I'm telling you, it's great here and cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so I have like a situation involving family members, and it's like a, you know, it's almost like an online. Part of it is my brother's kind of like flaming my friends, you know, and.
Wait, he's doing.
And it's
is he doing?
Kind of embarrassing.
Is he doing it? Is he doing it online, Angela?
Yes, it's on Facebook.
So you're on Facebook. You're mutual. Your friend. You're friends with your brothers and your brother, and he has some mutual friends with you. And
well, you know what? He's actually never met these people. They're my friends, and I think he's like starting to piss them off. And you know, I'm trying to like.
You know
I've
something.
I've been telling him sort of passive aggressively that
you know, he needs to stop doing that, you know. But he doesn't seem to think, he thinks he has a right to join in and do that. I mean, it is, you know, free country, but he's very sort of like,
check your privilege. Check your privilege, Angela's brother. I think that you should probably, you've had a conversation with him, like not the passive aggressive kind, but the kind where you call him and say, you know, Bob, I love keeping up with you on social media the way we get to do. I know so much more about you and your family and your life as a result of it, but I feel like part of what you're doing on social media is upsetting my friends, maybe to be provocative, maybe to be funny, but it doesn't feel so funny to me. And I really... you can do whatever you'd like with your friends, but with my friends, can you be a little more gentle? And see, do you think you could try something like that, or is he not the type?
I definitely, that sounds great. But, you know, what? I guess I'm at fault a little bit, too, because he'll sort of, you know, do what he's doing in response to something I'm saying on someone else's page, you know what I mean? And I...
So he's tweaking you, actually,
as much as he's tweaking you.
Got it. I've got it. I think you should probably have a nice, friendly, loving word with your brother and see if you can take it down a notch. People often, on social media, people so often forget that they're talking with real life people who have feelings and who might not think that their snarky humor is as hilarious as they do. Try that and let us know how it goes.
It's tough when it's your family and you have to deal with them at Thanksgiving.
I hear you. Thanks so much. Let's go to Iman in Montclair, New Jersey. Hi, Iman.
Hi, Philip. Thank you so much for taking my call. I adore you, as all of us do. So I just wanted to get your opinion on a situation I had a couple of years ago. I had a friend whose father fell ill. She sent out a group email saying, this happened with my father. I was on vacation, and I didn't respond because I was on vacation, and I also didn't really know what to say. She basically assaulted me with all of these text messages, like, I can't believe you're a terrible friend like this. I don't need you in my life.
Yeah.
And I told her, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't quite know what to say. I was on vacation. And I just wonder if you think there's a way to sort of remedy this, or if it was just that she kind of needed to vent and just kind of like make someone the target for her frustration and grief. Or because our friendship has ended and I still feel really bad over this, you know, so I'm not really sure if I apologize, you know, substantially enough, or I just wanted your opinion on that.
I think that's I think you're pointing to a problem that that's pretty common, that this friend of yours had some very strong feelings and she decided to channel those feelings in, you know, a way that was pretty diffuse. She put 20 people's names on an email and sent it around out into the world, which when you're a recipient, one of 20 recipients of an email, it doesn't feel very, it doesn't convey the same kind of weight that something one-on-one would. At the same time, this is a pretty heavy emotional thing that this woman is going through. So I think I understand why you sort of let it slide. I also understand how it goes that she felt furious. But I think you actually put your finger on it when you said you were a pretty convenient whipping boy.
Yeah.
In a situation that was really rough. I think if you called her up or texted her I'd rather you call, but maybe your relationship wasn't that way. Whatever would be natural, and for you to say, you know, I've really been thinking lately about the situation with your father and his illness, and I so wish that I had been exactly the friend you needed me to be in that minute, but I wasn't, and so I'm sorry, and I hope you'll forgive me. And if she can't forgive you that, then we can do the best we can. We can try to put ourselves in the other people's shoes. We can feel the pain we may have caused them, and we can try to make it right. But we can't control them saying, yeah, Iman, thank you so much for doing that. I love you. You're my friend. I feel better about this. You can't control that, but you can control the first part. So take a crack at it and see how you do. Will you?
I will. Yeah. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I am Philip Galanis, the New York Times Social Cues columnist, and I am in today for Leonard Lopate. I'm taking calls right now about giving and receiving apologies, and I'll be answering more of your questions after a short break. So please keep calling us at 212-433-9692, and you can also write to us on our show page at nyc.org/Lopate or tweet to us at Leonard Lopate. Later on the show, we'll be speaking to the director and the stars of a great new play about human guinea pigs in a medical trial, and then comedian Jesse Klein, who is also the head writer of Inside Amy Schumer on Growing Up into Adulthood. This is NYC and NYC.org. We will be back after the break.
Yes, I know I've been untrue, and I should have been good to you, but please have mercy on this heart of mine. Take me back and try me one more time.
Hi there, it's Philip Galanis, Social Cues columnist from the New York Times, and we are taking calls about apologies, giving them, asking for them, receiving them gracefully. And before we go back to the phone, let us play you a clip from Stephen Colbert that I think is pretty funny and also pretty illustrative of what the business of apology can be like in real life.
I also want to apologize to you because I've said a few things about you over the years that are in polite company, perhaps are unforgivable.
Almost
unforgivable.
And some nice things.
I don't remember saying anything nice. But anyway. I hope you'll accept my apology, and I just want to give you the opportunity. Is there anybody you'd like to apologize to right now yourself?
No.
No?
Is Stephen Colbert speaking with Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump? And one of the things that I find so wonderful about that clip is that Stephen did one of the things that is often really successful in eliciting apologies. He made himself vulnerable and said, you know, I'm really sorry for things that I've said that could have hurt your feelings over time. And he then waits expectantly for the other fellow to say, you know, and I am too. Well, occasionally that will be met with a denial. And we had a tweet from Sam who asked, how do you convince someone that apologizing will not affect their pride? Well, I think the short answer is, Sam, you can't. You can never bludgeon or you can lead the way to an open exchange that might lead to an apology, but you can't create the apology out of whole cloth. If the other woman or the other man doesn't really feel sorry, or their pride is standing in the way of making the apology, I don't think pointing that out to them is going to get you very far. But good luck trying. It has not been work. It hasn't worked for me. That doesn't mean it wouldn't work for you. Let us go to Sandy in Manhattan. Hi, Sandy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm enjoying your show, and I love your column.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I had a situation a few years back. I was actually in the process of getting divorced, and I hadn't really talked to other people about this yet, but I was confiding in it to my sister. And not long after that, I found out that she told my niece and nephew about it. And, you know, I didn't feel that it was appropriate for her to tell them, at least not without coming to me first and saying, you know, I feel uncomfortable keeping it secret. How should we handle this? So I confronted her about it, and I said that it really made me upset that she had told them, and I didn't think it was her place or her business to tell them. And she said, I'm sorry if I misunderstood you.
Her theory is when you were, quote, confiding, which is what you thought you were doing, she thought that you were just trying to work out a problem and that she could enlist other people in trying to help you solve the problem, too?
I'm not sure what she thought. I mean, my niece and nephew were kids at the time. You know, they were young. I mean, not young, but they, you know, were not grown up. So I don't know how they would have been enlisted to help with the problem. No, I think that when I told her that I thought she had done something wrong, she felt like it was my fault that she had done something wrong because I can't remember if I specifically said that this was confidential, but it certainly was very personal, and that was clear.
Right. It sounds like a version, Sandy, of I'm sorry if I made you feel bad, or I'm sorry, mm-hmm. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings, but I was really freaked out with work that day because I had a big thing. Do you think you're able to circle back to her and talk about the unresolved nature of it a little bit more, or do you think you want to just try to move forward? How much is this handicapping your relationship with your sister sort of day by day?
Well, unfortunately, it's not the only incident like this. So
yeah.
I would say our relationship's fairly handicapped.
So it's that's a rough one. Let's hope that the summer will lead to some barbecues that make you and your sister have a lot of fun together.
I will hope that.
I'm sorry for that. Let's go to Stephen in Airmont, New York. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. You have an apology you want to make to all of us, I understand.
Well, here's first of all, I'll say this, that the last time the United Nations Security Council was called into emergency session was when someone said to me, I'm sorry you feel that way. That's number one. And the other thing is, how about this? Say that someone has behaved so egregiously, so inappropriately, that apology, you know, making an apology, you know, that they should be your indentured servant for the rest of their lives, okay? And they don't ever, or they don't ever apologize for their terrible behavior. But they, you know, it's related more in maybe body language or things like that. But how about that for the person who is so defiant and unapologetic when they are just dead wrong, you know, then what?
I hear you, Stephen. I think that the most productive way to handle folks like that, and we all have them in our lives, is to try to imagine what they are so afraid of. What about making themselves, if we want to use Trump language, weak, or maybe sort of more neutral language, if they just want to make themselves vulnerable and put themselves in your hands and say, is it about them? Or is there any way that we are, is there any way that we're not welcoming, or I don't want to say welcoming, no, is there a way that we are signaling that an apology is not going to be the apology is not going to be accepted in the spirit that it was made? It sounds like that's definitely not the case with you. It sounds like this guy or woman that you have specifically in mind is just terrified. You know, their self-esteem can't take the knock or the hit of admitting that they're wrong. And those folks I feel very sorry for, because we all make mistakes every day, every minute.
Nobody
we're making
perfect.
Mistakes. And if I find that the ways that I've bonded most closely with people is after a gigantic screw up on my part or theirs, and we get to talk it through and find out something common and human and very powerful. In a way that I want to become President Obama for 10 seconds and say, actually, I get really optimistic when I hear people trying to apologize to each other, because it's such a great pathway for making our relationship stronger. And it sounds like that's the sort of where you're coming from, too, that you see that you recognize the strength of what an apology, the strengthening that an apology can have on a friendship. If people aren't going to go there, I really don't think there's much you can do about it. You can try to model the behavior, and you can even talk about your feelings, but if they're not going to do it, they're not going to do it. So good luck to you, Stephen. I thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
Adrian in New Jersey. Hello, Adrian.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Tell us your story, please.
Well, I worked for one of the largest healthcare insurance providers in New Jersey for a time. And part of my job was telling people what benefits were and weren't covered, as well as also telling people that their coverage was terminated. And when you tell somebody, you know, that their child can no longer get the medication that they need, or that the payment was 2 days late so they can no longer have coverage, I wanted to say sorry. I felt truly remorseful for it. However, we were instructed through training, and I had a couple conversations with my manager and supervisor that we're not allowed to say we're sorry.
I can understand that. As I'm also a lawyer, I hate to admit it, but I'll tell you that sorry also implies that you've done something wrong. And if you're an insurance company employee and you're admitting you've done something wrong, at the same time you're saying we're taking your coverage away, I can understand that must have made you feel really lousy. Is that the reason you're no longer there?
Yes, I'm no longer there. And, you know, it really tore me up some days. You know, calls to my mother, to my girlfriend, saying, you know, I don't know how I can do this, these poor people. But at the same time, part of me knew that I was getting paid to do exactly that and to not to do it unapologetically.
Right. Well, I love you for having the feelings of sadness at hurting other people, because that is a pretty awesome trait to have. And I'm sort of even doubly delighted that you're no longer in this situation where your every day is a misery. So I hope things are happy in your life, and I thank you for calling.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Let's go to Alex in Brooklyn.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
Hi. Well, that guy's dilemma was much more serious than mine, but I just had something happen last week that was very upsetting, which I'll try to keep it brief. It began with some slightly tense texts, which I decided to stop participating in, and immediately got a phone call from a friend. And I assumed she was calling to apologize, so I did not respond. And I didn't hear the message until that evening. And it was, I need to talk to you about this. But I thought, we're both upset. Let's give it some time. And the next morning, I got a text from her husband saying, she wants to talk to you. At which point I was like, this is not an emergency and everyone's upset, so I'm going to put it to bed. So I said, I'm not going to make that call, but thank you. That was my text. And I got an email that said, you don't care about anyone but yourself. I don't know why I expected any different, and I'm done, among other things. And so thus began many nights of a challenge, because, you know, we're in a community and friendship with these people. But eventually I got an email apologizing, but it was kind of a litany of why she was justified. And then I got another one after my husband spoke to them, and it said, you know, I'm sorry, I value our friendship. And my thought, I'm having trouble getting over it, because it wasn't sort of like, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I'm sorry I value our friendship is not a message of friendship. I don't know. At some point, maybe after you have had a good night's sleep and a great breakfast some weekend, maybe you can just give her a call on the telephone. And I think so many times we misunderstand our poison when we start the text fingers going. And I think, I'm sorry that happened to you, but I do think that if this person is really a friend of yours and has been a friend of yours, don't let this one nasty interaction, or even a general propensity for like poisonous texting, stop things. Maybe you can just give it a little breather, and you can you can try to move on. You can try to move on from there. That's my hope. That is my hope for you, Alex.
It wasn't about I said something while I was angry. It was a pronouncement about my very soul. And
yes, I understand.
It seemed to indicate that those were long held feelings about me, instead of, oh, I'm annoyed.
Yeah,
so
I bet
it's hard to move forward from that.
I bet you'll find that she is. I'll bet you find that she's a lot more human when you actually start talking to her, one human being to another. And I'm sorry, I say in our segment about apologies, that this was all the time we have to talk about being sorry and apologies. There's so much more that we need to talk about on this front, and we didn't even get to accepting apologies. But the good news is we can definitely keep this conversation going on the Leonard Lopate show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. Or on Twitter, where Leonard and the show's handle is at Leonard Lopate. So I want to thank everyone who shared their stories. And I hope that to everyone listening, we all got to that great feeling when we see that we are not the only one who is owed an apology. And we are certainly not the only one who probably owes a couple ourselves. I am Philip Galanis, and I'm in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.